estate planning mistakes, problems with trusts, and end-of-year IRA contribution concerns. All of this and how to solve them with America's number one retirement expert on this episode of Unlock Your Wealth Today. Your life fully invested. Welcome to Unlock Your Wealth Today, your life fully invested. I'm your purveyor of prosperity and host, Heather Wagenhals, and I'm making success simple on today's episode, bringing you the number one retirement expert in America. Yes, indeed. Retirement is part of our 3-5 financial strategy. There's two folds to it. In our fifth area of concern from our fourth key, knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. From our Keys to Riches financial philosophy. And that's asset preservation. That's estate planning as well as tax mitigation strategies. And who better to help us address some of these concerns than America's number one retirement expert? And Bob Carlson of Retirement Watch is joining us to help clear up some of these issues we discussed. Welcome to the show, Bob. It's so great to have you on Unlock Your Wealth Today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm excited that you're one of our new featured experts from Eagle Financial Publications. You know, there's nothing I like more than to be able to have some trust and value that I know that when I'm making a recommendation or I'm bringing someone to my audience, that I'm bringing the right person. And you're referred to as America's number one retirement expert. I don't think I could go any better than that.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased to be in alliance with you, and we're looking forward to this.
So I am super excited, especially because of the things that we get to talk about today. Because, you know, when we talk about our Keys to Riches financial philosophy, our most important key when it comes to overall strategy about how we should be thinking about our money and what we should be doing with our money as an overall strategy, that, you know, as we like to refer to it, a holistic approach. I have my 3-5 financial strategy from our fourth key, which is knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. And we ask ourselves three questions and we identify five areas of concern. And the three questions are simply ongoing, where we ask, where am I? Where am I going? And what's the difference? But you come into play in our five areas of concern. And the most important area that we seem to know the least about, or we feel like we have the most time to take care of, is our asset preservation area of concern. And this requires estate planning and tax mitigation strategies. And we never really think about our retirement like we should. I think most people bypass thinking about retirement because we interpret it as so far off into the future. And many people have trouble planning past next week because they've got to take the kids to soccer practice and the tuba. And then our husband does afternoon hockey in a senior league. And then we've got this going on and we've got our yoga class. And well, I'm not retiring in the next 20 or 30 years, so I'll worry about it later. And that just always seems to be where people focus. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about, and you just wrote about this in your, I think it was September issue of your Retirement Watch, and that is the 7 critical estate planning mistakes that people make and how to avoid them. Would you like to share a few of those? Maybe some of the bigger mistakes?
Sure, be happy to. Now, in this discussion, I skipped over the obvious ones that people heard about, you know, things like never getting around to drafting a will and things of that nature. So I'm more into topics where people have actually begun to address their estate plan, but they've just done the bare minimum and they've overlooked some really key elements that really determine whether or not your estate plan is going to be successful and how it's going to be impacting your children and maybe even your grandchildren. And the first step that people most often overlook is what I call educate and communicate. Most people, they don't want to discuss their eventual demise and their estate plan, and they also don't want to discuss their money with their children. But what the estate planners have found is that when an estate plan goes bad, it's often because there was not enough communication between the first generation and the second generation. Often what happens is the first generation that has the estate and has the money has certain things in mind, it has certain plans, and they don't bother to make that clear to their children. Also, when people are accumulating their estate and they're busy doing that, they don't take the time to kind of explain to their children about money and how they're accumulating it and what they're doing with it. So what often happens is people inherit an estate and they really don't know what to do. It's the first time they've had a significant amount of money or assets, and they haven't been educated or trained or really had any kind of discussion about what they're supposed to do with it. And that's where estate plans really go wrong. It's why something like only 30% or so of the states survive past the first generation, is because when that second generation inherits it, they're not sure what to do, and they'll do different things with it, most of which are wrong. They might just spend it all right away, or they might go out and hire a financial advisor who turns out to be a crook or incompetent and waste the money.
Or a friend of theirs, you know. I like to call it sudden wealth syndrome. And so, you know, all of a sudden, like, we lose all faculties and reason once we are presented with this big pile of money. And that's a challenge for people because, you know, we may not win the lottery, but if our parents were good stewards, we're going to inherit something.
Right. And, you know, the next generation, you need to prepare them for it. A lot of people just assume, well, I learned this during my lifetime, so somehow my kids picked it up as well. But often that's not the case. And if it's something you don't feel comfortable doing yourself, well, then you should start introducing your children to your financial advisors. And if you don't have a financial advisor, if you've done this on your own, you should really hire one just for the purpose of preserving this estate to the next generation, to make sure your children have someone that you've checked out that can be relied on and that they'll be able to help preserve that estate going forward.
Yeah, that brings up a really interesting question that I have. Now, you are both an attorney as well as an investment advisor, is that correct? Do you actively advise or do you just write these newsletters?
I do a little bit of consulting with a money management firm that has clients, but I'm primarily with the newsletter and writing books and things like that.
Well, that's very exciting. So we'll talk about more of that coming up soon. So as we think about this, would it make sense to have a financial planner that has the legal background, or do you want to keep your legal estate planning separate from your financial estate planning and just find people that play nice together and get two separate entities working in concert with each other?
Yeah, I think it's best to have more than one person involved. So I think for most people, it's a good thing to do is to have an attorney who's doing the estate planning and then have a financial planner who knows the basics of estate planning and is used to working with the estate planning attorney, but also has other areas that are more his expertise or her expertise that might be investments and taxes and just long-term planning and budgeting. So it's better to have, you know, more than one point of view, more than one area of expertise helping you out.
Okay. So now that we've addressed the educate and communicate, because I think that that's a rough thing for a lot of people. I remember when I was, 18 or 19, my dad had asked me if I would, if anything happened to him and my stepmother at the same time, you know, if they were involved in a fatal crash or something, they didn't want their child to go to the only at the time, living grandparents. They didn't want them to go to the maternal grandparents. They wanted somebody that was connected and young enough to be able to raise their child. And so my dad asked me if I'd be willing to do that. And I said, okay. And then I said, how much money am I going to get? And he goes, you don't need to know that. And I said, well, why not? Don't I need to know how much resources I have? And he says, I don't want you waxing my shoes the next time we're out on the boat. And that was his reason for not communicating.
Right. Yeah, it's everyone's got a reason for it, but there are a lot of people that are just not comfortable discussing their money or their estate plan. And as I said, that's the major cause of problems when the estate is inherited, is there just was not communication.
Yeah, so I think, and you know, especially if you have children that maybe have gone wayward, you know, do you really want to be talking to your child that's the drug addict to let them know that they're going to be inheriting a big pile of money so they don't have to change their ways or straighten out their act? I mean, I think that maybe that might be part of some of the challenges that folks have. I mean, specifically, I've had some coaching clients that was their hesitation about communicating with their children because they had one that was sideways, if you will, and the last thing they wanted that child to know is that they were going to be inheriting anything if they didn't change their ways, even though that was still their intention, was to still include the child, but just not make the child aware of it. So communication is a tough part for any type of relationship. And especially, you know, people have so much anxiety built up about money. I think that creates more of a challenge. What else, what other things should people look to avoid when estate planning?
Well, one thing they do is they don't look at potential family conflicts. You can use the estate plan to reduce conflicts, but in some cases it actually increases them. For example, if you know two of your offspring don't particularly get along or don't trust each other, it's not a good idea to name one of the executor of the estate and the other one just be a beneficiary, because then there's going to be all kinds of suspicions and conflicts.
Oh, yes.
And nature. And a lot of people don't think that through. Their attorney or estate planner really doesn't bring it up. You know, a lot of times these conflicts are kind of simmering while the parents are still alive because the kids don't want to, you know, have a full-blown explosion in front of the parents and cause all kinds of problems there. So they simmer and then the parents pass away and everything kind of explodes. And as I said, sometimes the estate plan is set up so it triggers these conflicts and explosions. So it's something you want to think about. No family is perfect, and there's no shame in that. The estate planners have heard all this before. They have solutions to a lot of these issues. So it's important that if you see in your family these problems or potential problems, that you bring them up to your estate planner and say, you know, what can we do here so that this won't get worse and hopefully we can maybe cure it or cause it to improve a bit.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree. And I don't think that there is a detail minute enough that shouldn't be addressed, because I've watched in my own family siblings go to war over things like pots and pans. You know, so...
Yes, every estate planner has stories of very trivial assets causing these tremendous disagreements, and oftentimes the entire estate might not even be worth much, but these kids are willing to go to war over it.
Yeah, it's crazy, and you think it's weird until it happens to you, till you remember that one little trinket or tchotchke that your dad always carried around that you wanted, and somebody else, just to be spiteful, doesn't want you to have it because maybe you were the favorite child or something. It's silly how it gets, but and you think, oh my gosh, only in television, but truth can be stranger than fiction sometimes. So when we get back from the break, let's address one more of these and then let's flip to another topic, shall we? You are listening to Bob Carlson on Unlock Your Wealth Today. We'll be right back with more after this. Welcome back to Unlock Your Wealth Today, Your Life Fully Invested. We're having an incredible conversation with America's number one retirement expert, Bob Carlson. And Bob, we were talking the things that we need to avoid with estate planning. Can you share one more of those things from your newsletter this past month or from September that can maybe help us kind of not make the same mistakes that people find themselves in often when it's too late?
Sure. Living trusts are an important thing. Many people have these in their estate plans, but they don't what we call fund them. You're supposed to fund your living trust. You have a living trust to hold assets while you're alive so that if you become disabled, a trustee can take over right away and manage the assets, and also that when you pass away, these assets will avoid probate, which in a lot of states is very time-consuming, very expensive, and the living trust avoids that. But what many people do is they don't fund the living trust. They get the living trust document from their attorney, and they take it home, and they put it on a shelf, and they forget that they have to actually transfer legal title of their assets to the trust. If you don't do that, then the trust is just an expensive stack of papers sitting on your file or in your shelf. So you have to transfer the deed to your real estate, to the trust, the title to your automobiles. All your financial accounts have to be retitled in the name of the trust. Now, many people don't do this because, you know, it's apparently time-consuming, obviously, and it takes a bit of work. And so we have a lot of living trusts out there that were meant to do good things for the estate and for the family, but nothing's going to come of it because the people did not take the time to fund the living trust and transfer assets ownership to this trust. So when they die, their whole estate's going to be covered under their will, and it's going to go through the probate process, and the living trust is basically just been a waste of money.
So, Bob, correct me if I'm wrong. Would you say that most of the time people don't fund these trusts because maybe they're coming to terms with their own mortality, and they're like, well, I got this far, and I can do the rest of that later, but I'm kind of just not good with this, and so I'm going to hold off and work on the rest later. I know I need to do it, but I don't have a round to it to get to.
Right. That's a factor. You know, it takes people a lot of, you know, they have to overlook that to go to the estate planning attorney's office and get the will and the trust, and then they come back home, and they don't want to continue to think about their own mortality, and they think, well, I'm doing well. I'm not there yet. There's no urgency, so let's just put it aside and do that another time. So that's one of the reasons that these living trusts don't get funded, and they cause problems eventually for the heirs in the estate.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I'm thinking about this, I had just attended this real estate seminar, and it was about real estate investment, and I have a real estate brokerage now, and a girlfriend of mine really wanted to take this guy's class. And so I said, okay, I'll go with you. And mostly because I just wanted to keep her from getting in really deep with some of these people, because they give you a free class to upsell you to the next class, to upsell you to the next class or a coaching package. And so I wanted to be able to say, okay, now that you've got the foundation and you're ready to get started, let's go. So I wouldn't have to teach her was my intent. But I'm listening to this guy who is only like some real estate guy. He discloses his background, and it is not legal. It is not financial. He's just a guy that's done well investing in real estate. And so he's, you know, passing on his wisdom, so to speak. But he's starting to talk about trusts. And everything out of his mouth as his lips moved was wrong. And I was thinking about that. And as we talked about not funding the trust, what are some major mistakes that people make when it comes to trusts? Or is there one particular big one that we should worry about or work to avoid?
Well, a lot of people don't really know what their trusts do. They get talked into it by an estate planning, or in the example you gave by maybe a real estate person or a life insurance person who's doing estate planning is kind of a sideline, and they don't know what the trusts are for. They don't really know what they do. They might set up an irrevocable trust and not realize that once they put assets in there that it's subject to the terms of the trust and they have limited options to get out of it. So I think the main thing is people don't take the time to force the estate planner to tell them exactly what this does until they understand it. And so they go forward with kind of a limited understanding of what the trust, really what the rest of their estate plan does, and that causes problems down the road.
So what can we do proactively to kind of mitigate some of this? Is there a way to get educated? Do we get all of our, you know, estate plan, financial plan people starting to talk the same language, you know, because, you know, a financial planner says it. So you go to your attorney and you say, I need one of these, but maybe you're not as articulate about what it is. I mean, where is the stopgap or what's the most important thing that needs to happen in this process? Is it education? Is it where, what is it?
Yeah, you need to really educate yourself, at least to the extent that you understand the different vehicles in an estate plan enough so you can talk with the estate planner. You need to know when someone's recommending something exactly what it's supposed to do. And once your estate plan is put together, before you sign things, you should make sure you understand it and write things down. A lot of times people will meet with their estate planner or financial planner, and they'll understand things at the time because it was just explained to them, but they don't write it down. And then when they leave the office, maybe a few hours later, maybe weeks later, they've kind of forgotten the details because they don't deal with this sort of thing every day. And so then they don't really realize or remember what the plan does, what's in there. And that leads to another mistake where they don't update the plan when they need to update it because they don't remember what it does. So really educating yourself, making sure your financial professionals explain things to you. Don't really just take their word for it. Make them explain it until you understand it. And that's another reason it pays to have a more than one advisor, so that if your financial planner is telling you one thing, you can go to the estate planner and say, does that make sense? Or should I be doing something else? And you can have them work with each other. So, you know, they can educate each other rather than you having to be in the middle. So really the whole education and coordination thing is very important.
Well, I think that, you know, that's a common theme from our conversation is it's all about education and, you know, just acknowledging that we need to address retirement and estate planning issues is not enough. We must really delve into this. And even though we're not planning to do this as a profession, we still have to create a level of understanding to make effective decisions for our financial future as it comes to retirement, as well as our legacy. I mean, because they're connected, but it almost seems like they're independent. But they're interrelated, maybe that's a better term for it.
Right. The estate plan is really an important part of your financial plan because, for example, one way they play off with each other is you might want to give assets away to your children during your lifetime because, you know, why should they wait to get the benefit of these assets and maybe like to see how they enjoy them or how they use them. But you have to coordinate with that with your retirement plan because you don't want to give away money you can't afford to give away. You only want to give away things that you're pretty sure you're not going to need during your lifetime. So that's just one example of how the estate plan is interrelated with your retirement plan and your other financial plans, and there's many other ways they work together.
Well, this has been really great. Now, I'd like to switch gears because we're here near the end of the year, and this is where everybody's gearing up for the holidays and for holiday spending. But one thing that people neglect is end of the year funding of their IRAs or retirement products that they have. And in your October issue of Retirement Watch, you wrote about 7 strategies for year end for 2018. Would you like to share a couple of those that folks can maybe implement today to help maximize what's going to happen later on in their retirement?
Sure. And I'd have to say first, the important thing is don't wait until the end of the year, because the IRA custodians and any financial planner, estate planner you need to work with, they're going to be pretty busy. And if you wait until we're midway through December, you're going to have trouble being able to execute the things you really need to do. So start now before we get into December so you can get done what you need to get done. So that's one thing. Another thing is, as you said, fund your plans. You really have until you file your tax return to put money into your IRAs, but why wait that long? You want to get that money in there so the tax deferral in those accounts gets to work. If you continue to keep that money until the last minute, then you're going to have that the income and gains that accrue between now and then are going to be on your individual income tax return when they could be protected from taxes. So make your contributions early and make sure you're putting in as much as both your finances and the law allow you to put in. You want to be putting money away for your retirement. The tax law gives you these advantages. Take advantage of them, and take advantage of them as early as you can.
Now, we've heard this term, but it only applies to certain people in a particular age bracket. But what's a QCD or a qualified charitable distribution? And if we're eligible, what does that mean? Because didn't some of the tax laws change around that a little bit?
Yeah, and actually, for the qualified charitable contribution or distribution, they changed in a good way. They made the QCD permanent. Previously, it had been made temporary, it would last 2 or 3 years, and then it would expire, and Congress would reinstate it. But now it's permanent, so you can actually use it in your planning. And this applies to anyone age 70 and a half or older that has a traditional IRA and who is charitably inclined. Now, normally, if you want to make a charitable contribution from your IRA, it's treated as a distribution to you. So you include it in your gross income, and you might or might not be able to deduct the charitable contribution. But if you're over age 70 and a half, you qualify for the QCD, which means you can direct your IRA custodian to make a transfer directly from the IRA to the charity that you designate. That way, it's not included in your gross income. It's not considered a distribution to you, but it counts as part of your required minimum distribution from the IRA for the year. Many people don't like these required minimum distributions because they're forced to take money out when they don't really need it, and they include it in their income taxes, and it might trigger other taxes because it increases their gross income.
Right, it pushes them into somewhere else that they actually end up with less.
Right, it might trigger higher taxes on your Social Security. It might trigger higher Medicare premiums. There are a whole bunch of things that can be triggered when you have to take a required minimum distribution that you don't really need. So the QCD is a way around that. If you're inclined to give to charity and you're over age 70 and a half, give directly from your traditional IRA. It counts towards your required minimum distribution, but you don't pay taxes on it the way you would with normal required minimum distribution. So it's just a great deal. It's the best way for anyone over age 70 and a half to make their charitable contributions. As I said, it's now made permanent, so you can plan to use that year to year going forward. And you can do this for up to $100,000 of contributions each year. So it's something available to middle-class people and also to fairly wealthy people.
Oh, well, that's exciting because now you can make a difference with money that, you know, was just going to sit there now. And so now there's a better benefit where you're not penalized. So that's pretty exciting. Is there another tip that maybe we could maximize before we finish our time here? We've gone, I can't believe how much ground we've covered in such a short period of time. But is there one more strategy that somebody might want to make before the end of the year?
Well, people with traditional IRAs should always decide, look each year, is whether you should convert part or all of that IRA into a Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is one of the best tax planning vehicles out there because the money accumulates in there tax-free. And then when you eventually take it out, it's also tax-free. And that's very unusual. So you can convert part of a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA and get it into that tax-free vehicle. You'll have to include in your gross income the amount you convert just as though it were distributed to you, so you will pay taxes on it now, but you avoid taxes in the future. And that can be a good thing if that money is going to accumulate in the Roth IRA for a long period of time. Also, if you anticipate your income tax rate might be higher in the future than it is now, it certainly makes sense then to pay taxes now instead of paying taxes later. So there are a lot of things you have to look at when you do a conversion. It's best to either meet with a financial planner who has some expertise in this area or work with some of the software that's available on the Internet that can look through the different variables you have to consider. But most people who have sizable traditional IRAs should consider near the end of each year whether or not to convert it into a Roth IRA.
Well, that's interesting, and many people barely know the difference between a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA. So it's great that we have a way to evaluate what might be the better plan for us. Well, it's been awesome having you on the show. I look forward to engaging with you on future broadcasts where we can have these conversations and learn more about how to protect our legacies and create a retirement that we can really enjoy. If folks want to learn more about what you offer or find your Retirement Watch newsletter advisory service, where can folks find you?
Well, they could go online and check out retirementwatch.com, or they can call at 800-552-1152.
Outstanding. Well, again, thank you so much for being a part of the show today, Bob. And for those of you without a pencil, never fear. UnlockYourWealthToday.com is here where you can visit Bob's show page and his featured expert page to get the links to all of his resources and so much more. For the maestro of moolah, Michael Terry, I'm Heather Wagenhals. Now go out and unlock your wealth today.
UnlockYourWealthToday.com is produced by Heather Wagenhals and the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. UnlockYourWealthToday.com and its affiliates are copyrighted 2018 with all rights reserved. For more information on the Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series, please visit our website at www.unlockyourwealthtoday.com.